So today I want to talk about our updated models for the S&P 500 and the ASX 200. But first I'll just briefly touch on the effect of the election. Normally, federal elections in Australia add around about 2% to returns in a couple of months after the election. There's a 2% excess return to the S&P 500. And where that comes from is that it's saved up from the previous 2 months before the election. So basically the market underperforms by 2% before an election, federal election, and adds that back in a couple of months after. So I expect that to be a good thing. I think the normal seasonal pattern from here is that the market would continue to be weak really until the end of June and then kick in July. And I think there's a couple of extra reasons why I think that might continue. Briefly, in terms of differences in Labor policy, around about the time of the budget, the new Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, noted that he wouldn't be bound by the concept of the GDP gap. Now, I've explained before that if you get the size of the budget deficit and you take away the GDP gap, which is the excess resources in the economy, that shows you how much fiscal policy actually adds to inflation. And I've said that that's a really big deal in the Biden administration and is a major source of US inflation, not so much here. But what's interesting is in the budget costings, in the costings, campaign costings released at the end of last week, Chalmers had a slightly, very slightly larger budget deficit going forward than did the coalition. It's only about 0.25% of GDP, but that 0.25% of GDP would add to inflation, and that would add to real interest rates that, as you know, required by the RBA going forward. The real test of the incoming government's economic policy is in the budget, that new budget that they say they are going to bring in, and that will be in September, October next year. So then you'll have a real gauge of what the change in economic policy is. S&P 500. For pretty much the last year and a half, every quarter has shown earnings being better than anticipated for the last year and a half, every quarter. Amazingly, earnings would beat on every quarter. The real problem of the quarter we have just been through, and which is the first quarter, is that this is the first time we've had a significant miss on earnings for the S&P 500 in the last year and a half. So earnings were expected to be, last updating this version of the model, earnings around about that time were about $51.20 a share, but with 93% report. Now, what they've been doing is they've been actually beating that by a significant amount for the last year and a half, but now we've missed, the S&P 500 has missed that, coming in at $49.71 a share with 93% reported. And that's had an effect in terms of loss of confidence in the model. It takes the model down and generates a loss of confidence, but it also has an additional effect of widening corporate credit spreads. And that tightens liquidity in the S&P 500, and that puts up just a touch more downward pressure on the market. Having said that, we anticipate that earnings will continue to grow for the next three quarters, and that earnings in the second quarter will rise to $55 a share and $56.80 by the end of this year. That's up from the current reporting we've just seen of $49.71. So the path of earnings in the US is still going up, and that's a reason for confidence. And as a result of that, earnings per share with the 12-month rolling operating earnings per share, which is what's in the S&P 500 model, it's $210.51 a share for the first quarter, and that rises up to $224.30 by the end of the year. So it's, you know, modest uptrack, and so the model in terms of earnings should go up. But the problem, of course, is But the other things in the model are bond yields and corporate spreads. Corporate spreads are now widening because of that earnings miss. Bond yields were going up dramatically, coming down a little bit, but that gives us a fair value now of 38.79 for the S&P 500, which is lower than the one I talked about a month ago. And that's about 94 points below the actual value yesterday of 39.74. So still moderately weak in terms of because of those widening credit spreads, and you'd sort of expect it to come down again to the end of June. ASX 200, our model estimates, explains 92% of monthly variation, pretty good model. We include those credit spreads, those widening US credit spreads in this model, and that gives us a fair value of 71.20, and that's just slightly below where the market is. So the market is settling down to a structurally lower value. Might be a little bit softer next month, but it's really the Australian market incredibly close to fair value where it is right now. Are there any questions?
You said that the market might be a bit weaker for the next few weeks coming in July. Could you just maybe elaborate on that?
Well, it's a seasonal influence, that, as everybody knows, so in May. But the seasonal influence is that the market declines between actually that April is the seasonally strongest month of the year, and then it tends to decline in May and June. And then beginning of a new financial year, it kicks. But you also see that effect. It's the beginning of next quarter in the US, and it begins to kick in the US as well. Also, there's an effect of American elections, midterm elections, that you tend to have a surge in the months running up to the midterm elections. So I kind of think we'd have an early, you tend to have an early correction in the first half of the year and a rally into midterm elections in the second half of the year. So I think we'll have that same kind of structure. But market's fallen down to a level where it's, the outlook relative to the models are effectively flat. But that equilibrium is at a lower level than it was at the end of last year.
Michael, do you think that in the US and all the data you're seeing that the market's kind of conflating a normalisation in consumption behaviour to a recession rather than something more sinister? Or what's your view then?
Well, I've said that based on the preferred, the academically preferred measure of the US yield curve, a US recession is definitely not in sight. And there's a piece I wrote a couple of weeks ago about how you actually find that academically preferred one on the Fed website and how you can run it yourself and come to that decision yourself. Last week I talked about the US slowing down to a soft landing, that it was growing at 5.5% last year, and it's slowing down to about a 2% rate. And it's kind of the story of getting it, you know, the fast car slows from 250 kilometres to 100 kilometres an hour and you think it's stopped, so you get out to see what's happened. But for the US economy, 2% growth is still pretty healthy, and it's that slowdown, I think, which has been mistaken for the beginnings of recession, but the evidence of a recession is absolutely simply not there. What you've got is very low unemployment in the US. You will have very strong wages growth. You will have strong domestic consumption. It's just that people aren't used to living in a world of full employment. We haven't had an extended period of full employment both in the US or Australia since the 1950s and the 1960s. We're about to get to that point again of extended periods of full employment. In the full employment business cycle is much shorter than what we've been looking through. If you've got high levels of unemployment, you'll tend to have long business cycles because it takes a long time to get to the employ enough people to get the economy down to the point where it's run out of people to give jobs to. If you're starting from relatively full employment, let's say 5% unemployment, and you're moving to 3.5%, every business cycle. It doesn't take a long time to do that. So the business cycles in the 50s and the 60s, and I think now, will be much shorter business cycles of around about 4 to 5 years, whereas the business cycle we last went through was the longest US business cycle in history, longest period of expansion in history.